This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast Show 779.
I went from delivering pizzas to a nine-figure real estate career, which was absolutely insane. And she literally said to me the words that changed my life. You're just too ambitious. This is big money and you could lose your damn shirt. Real estate is the freedom vehicle. Period.
What's going on, everyone? It's David Green, your host of the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast, the biggest, the best, the baddest real estate podcast in the world. Joined today by a fellow bad man, Robert Alasolo. Rob, how you feeling today?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling energized. I walked 10,000 steps today. I worked out. I launched a company. It's like the running joke on Instagram where they're like, start an LLC by 6 a.m. I actually did. Not by six, but like later on. So it feels good. I'm feeling like I got a new vibe about me. How about that?
Apparently, walking 10,000 steps can completely change your life. So there you have it. This is what Rob considers exercise.
And I also worked out. Cool it, pal.
Okay. So I thought you were saying the workout was the 10,000 steps, and I was a little disappointed. That's in addition to the workout. Now I'm getting excited. Okay.
And very important, I through New Compass Send Company, I was able to save us $400,000 to $600,000 in taxes on our Scottsdale property through cost segregation and bonus depreciation and all that good stuff. So yeah, it always feels nice to lower your tax bill.
Oh yeah, and I love that you took credit for it, like you invented cost segregation or had the crazy idea to utilize it for the situation when that's one of the reasons we bought the house. But
it's true. However, my company is a cost segregation company, and thus.
Oh, I did not know about this. You have a cost segregation company now.
I do. Uh-huh.
All right. Well, slow down over there, Turbo. You're making all the rest of us feel inferior.
Well, you have like 18 company. You start LLCs by like 15 LLCs by 5 a.m.
That's me. I'm that guy. Jocko's up doing a workout and I'm up starting an LLC. That's exactly right. In today's show, we interview Pamela Bardi, who has a fascinating story. Who went from delivering $9 pizzas to owning a nine-figure real estate portfolio, and you can too. We interview Pamela, and she shares a lot of practical advice as well as sort of the emotional parts of her story where her brain clicked, things changed, and she got off of the wrong path and onto the right path where she's now living her best life, and we are excited to bring this to you. Rob, what were some of your favorite parts of today's show?
I think it's a really great story because we get right into why she wants to build generational wealth. A lot of people just sort of toss that out there, but she gave us the motivation on how to do that. She talked about how she found a mentor that helped guide her through a lot of her first deals and how that led into a lot of the successes. She's done 100 deals and she's like 31. I mean, it's like a very motivating guest to have on the pod.
And very fun too. You guys are going to love this one. You're going to want to go follow her when you're done. Before we bring in Pamela, today's quick tip is you've got the skills. Now go put them to work in real estate. Many people listening to this, yes, you, as you're listening right now, have specific skills that you develop through life experiences or workplace experiences or a combination of the two. Those will help you in your real estate career. Just look for the right opportunity to use them. And a bonus quick tip to listen for. Your pizza delivery guy may help you build a deal funnel for deals. Listen to today's show to find out how. All right, let's bring in Pamela. Pamela, welcome to the Bigger Pockets Podcast. How are you today?
I am doing lovely, my friend. How are you?
I am wonderful. And I'm excited to dig into your story here. There's so many cool parts of it. So people have a little understanding of your background. You have done over 100 deals between flips and renovations, currently own 27 units, have been investing for 10 years in Boston. And as a fun fact, you side hustled as a DJ in college. Anything that I missed?
Sounds about right. And I'm a dog mom. I have two dogs.
What's better than low money down? No money down. Now through Rent to Retirement, you can buy a brand new construction turnkey rental property for no money down. Wait, hold on. This can't be right. I need to double check with Zach, Rent to Retirement CEO.
Oh, hey, Rob.
Zach, how the heck are you selling turnkey rental properties for $0 down?
It's not that complicated, Rob. Rent to Retirement has new construction properties up to $20,000 below retail prices. We also have investor loans with rates as low as 3.99% and down payment options as low as 5% or sometimes even zero money down. You get all the cash flow, appreciation, and equity for as little as zero money down. That's an infinite return.
Hold on, wait, let me get on this before we tell it to the whole Bigger Pockets audience.
Just head to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com or text REI to 33777. That's REI to 33777 to learn more about how you can get started investing with no money down today.
Get your next new construction property at a steep discount or invest with no money down. Head to renttoretirement.com today. If you're in the landlord game, then you know the importance of solid tenant screening. That's where Rent Ready steps in. Now, Rent Ready's got an important new feature, proof of income verification. And get this, with Plaid certified reports, you'll see everything from income summaries to total earnings by month. Say goodbye to those gut check moments and hello to confidence in renting with Rent Ready. Rent Ready is included in your pro membership at Bigger Pockets. If you're not a pro, they're offering a 6-month plan for $1. You can't beat that. I actually don't even know how they make money doing that, but it's above my pay grade, pal. Visit rentready.com. That's RENTREDI.com and use the code BP Investor. That's BP like Bigger Pockets, investor like me, to get 6 months of Rent Ready for $1, which is crazy. You might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from ConnectInvest. ConnectInvest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. Connectinvest.com/VP.
So Pamela, what are your dog's names first off? Let's give them a shout out.
Absolutely. Rhea, who's 5 years old, and Blue, who's a year and a half. They are hilarious.
Okay. This sounds like the makings of a country song already. We're off to a great start here. Do you call him Old Blue by chance? I feel like you got to call the dog Old before Blue.
I have not yet, but I've definitely got to mention that to him. He is a spunky dude.
All right. So tell me, how has real estate investing transformed your life up to this point?
Where do I even begin? I mean, it's transcended generations from me at this point, which is, I think, the most beautiful part of it all. By the time I was 27, I went from delivering pizzas to a nine-figure real estate career, which was absolutely insane. And, you know, in the development game, the construction game, you know, learning about how to add value to properties and all these different things, and then building my own portfolio in this realm has really enabled me to kind of be financially free at such a young age and also create generational wealth for my family to come and generations beyond that, if they're smart with it, of course. And maintain what I've established. But yes, that's, I think, the most powerful thing about real estate. It's a long game, right? You guys say that all the time. Like, it's a long game. Aside from that, too, is also community, right? Like, how cool is it that real estate is the space, like, as developers and as people in real estate, we help to define communities, right? Like, we help get people into those homes. We create those homes. You know, there's a whole... you know, ideology that I have all about all of that, but it's just the coolest thing in the world for me.
That's really cool. Well, I don't want to glaze over what you said, which is like you went from delivering $9 pizzas to building a nine-figure real estate business. That's really cool. One thing that you mentioned was generational wealth, and I was just sort of curious on, is there a particular reason why you want to build generational wealth? Because that is something we talk about a lot in real estate, but I don't think we ever get into why that's important to the actual individual. Is there anything in particular that resonates for you, why that's such an important goal?
Totally. So, I mean, I came to the U.S. when I was about 5 years old, and my parents came here with nothing to build the American dream. And really everything from such a young age for me in my ear was build for your family, build for the future, do all of that stuff. And then my parents, you know, getting into business and all of that, and then me eventually getting into real estate, I saw the impact of all of that kind of in the long run. And I understood how powerful real estate truly is. I mean, you know, we all think about like, oh, let's make money. Let's do this. Let's get into real estate. Let's do this long term. And then we really look at it. And most people don't ask themselves, like, why am I doing this? You know, like, why hustle so hard? Why do this? Why go crazy over all of this? And the answer is legacy, right? Why are we working our tails off at this point? It's so that our generations can then have something we didn't have and continue to elevate the generational line continuously down the line, because real estate builds that wealth. I mean, last stat I read was 76% of the U.S., their main source of wealth comes from their primary residence, which is insane. You know, they take equity lines of credit to pay for college. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. Like, this is a powerful wealth vehicle for Americans.
So as we mentioned, you're in Boston now. Is that where you grew up?
Yeah. So when I was 5 years old, we moved to Boston, Mass. And that's where we've been kind of this whole time since we came from Italy, because I was born in Tirana, Albania, which is right above Greece. Moved to Italy when I was about 6 months old. And then we won the visa lottery when I was about five to come to the US. And we came straight to Boston.
Okay. So you were 5 years old when you came here. So most of your life you've lived here. How did you avoid picking up the Boston accent? I don't hear any of it right now.
I don't know. I see, the thing is, Dave, a lot of people tell me that I do have it. They're like, oh, you must be from Boston. And I'm like, I don't have an accent.
Tell me that you parked the car near the water.
No, near the Harvard Yard.
I parked the car near Harvard Yard. And see, I see my R's and everything. I'm like, I don't know what. Where do the people say I got the Boston accent? It's hilarious.
All right. So you avoided a Boston accent, but you did not avoid being exposed to entrepreneurialism. I understand that you went to college. What was your major in school?
So when I went to undergrad, I went to Stonehill College. And I literally thought, so my parents came here when I was about 5 years old. My dad ended up buying a restaurant when I was about 10. He spent many, many years like working like three jobs. I barely saw my dad when we were growing up. So my dad worked all types of jobs and eventually ended up buying a restaurant because his best friend gave him a down payment to do so. And he said, hey man, you know, the way that you build wealth in America is one of two ways. A, you own real estate. B, you own your own business. He's like, I know you don't have the credit to buy real estate right now, but keep that in mind for the future. But here's a down payment. Go out and buy a restaurant. So my father bought a restaurant when I was about 10 years old, and it was the coolest thing ever because I just wanted to hang out with my dad, and so I dragged myself to work with him. When I went to college, though, ironically enough, my parents said, hey, Pam, you know, we really, like, we want you to get into something that's more secure. Like, we don't want you, like, working 12 to 14 hours like we do in our business and, like, you know, just so that you can get married, do, you know, start a family, do that stuff, which is interesting coming from entrepreneurs, right? But the restaurant business is really tough, especially, you know, and growing up in the immigrant mentality of, like, you know, how much you physically work determines your success levels. That's a whole nother thing. So when I went to college, I actually went in for marketing. I got like a full scholarship to Stonehill and I was wicked pumped. Say that Boston came out. and so, you know, and then I'm taking this applied calc for a applied calculus class. And first off, like, I don't even understand algebra one, let alone algebra two, and then get into calculus. So I get to the middle of the semester and I have like a 40 in this class. And I'm like, I'm going to lose my scholarship. Like, I need to drop this class. I'm thinking that I went in for marketing, was then, you know, going to graduate Stonehill and work corporate and then get into, you know, a 9 to 5. And then when I was 40, like, started business or something. That was not the case. I dropped this class and I thought my entire world ended. Basically, because I could no longer take that major because I needed that class.
Isn't it funny how certain classes click and they make all the sense in the world, and other ones, for the life of you, no matter how hard you work, something just doesn't fit? Like, very smart people can struggle with certain topics. I think a lot of people that go through an experience like yours, they feel there's something wrong with them. It crushes their confidence. They think, I'm just not meant for this. Other people are good at this, not me. And then the saddest thing ever happens, they quit. They say, all right, well, I'm just going to resign myself to being a secretary or playing small in some way because I tried and I wasn't smart enough. I didn't make it. Did you have a moment like that where you questioned your ability to start a business, to be an entrepreneur, to be successful? Or did you just have an unflappable confidence that carried you through that?
Well, you made a lot of interesting points there. Now, some classes struck more than others, and it was so interesting to me how, like, I loved geometry. I was a beast at chemistry. Like, I had 101 average in chemistry. Like, it's not even, like, I should have been in Breaking Bad. Like, I should have been casted for that at this point, to be honest. But I really got to a point where I got super down on myself. I'm like, dang, like, why don't I get this? No matter, like, how much I try, it seems like I'm, like, beating myself against a wall and it's just not working. And, you know, I just, you know, I've always been surrounded by incredible mentors and incredible souls in my life that were like, Pam, like, just because that doesn't work for you means that you're just meant for something else. And that is totally cool and totally okay. And don't freak out. So I decided to then be dramatic and change my entire major to communications, in which I loved because I love people. I absolutely love people. And then shortly thereafter, I was missing the whole business piece because I love that. Business, you know, it's something that was kind of inherent to me. Like, imagine, like, you're in the restaurant business since you were 10 years old. You develop all these business skills. I mean, my parents were making me pay bills by the time I was like 12. They're like, Pam, you call them and make the payment over the phone. And I'm like, I don't know what to say. They're like, well, we can't speak English, so you're going to have to do it, you know? And so these, like, skill sets that, you know, as a kid, you know, I was like, oh my God, this is so annoying. Like, no other kid has to do this, but it built me into business. So reflecting back on that when I was in college, it was kind of like, well, I'm missing the whole business element of this. I love entrepreneurship. So that's when I decided to go into Stonehill and say, hey, I want to double major and I want to create my own major in entrepreneurship. And I remember it was Professor Ubertasio, and he's like, Pim, you'd be the first in school history to do that. I mean, we've had minors, but never a major. So that's when I combined the two. But even still at that point, I didn't think that I was going to be an entrepreneur right when I graduated. I had another moment, another one.
Okay. All right. So, well, first of all, I just had like a flashback to my childhood because my parents are also immigrants. And I used to always have to call companies and pretend to be my dad. Or my mom, you know, whenever I had a higher voice. I did that. I've never met anyone else that had to do that. So small connection there. But I know you were helping your parents out occasionally with the restaurant. You picked up another sort of side hustle or another part-time job in college too, right?
I created it for sure. I've always loved music. I've always been at parties, like under 21s. Anything that I can get into, I was there. I was vibing. That was my jam. So come college days, you know, I'm a freshman going out on campus at Stonehill and I'm going to all these parties. I'm like, this music is horrendous. Like, you can't even dance to this. Like, who are these people? Who's DJing these things? And so went back to my room with my three roommates and we just threw a party and it got super wild. And from there, my name spread around campus and all of a sudden I became DJ Pammy B and was getting paid stupid money per night to DJ and get free drinks and get free food and everything. And back in 2009, that was a lot of money, like $300 a night plus food plus drinks was unreal. I was like, guys, I've made it. So it's something I did all 4 years and it was a blast. It was cool because it was like, you know, you control the energy of the room. You're bringing different cultures together. It's a vibe. Like, and the stuff you see from the DJ booth is hysterical. you get the best view of all of it.
So this experience broke you out of the like paint color by number, go there, here's the box you fit in, then you move to this one and this one, the kind of the corporate world that you were preparing yourself to get into, to seeing creativity, to seeing opportunity, to making your own way. Like, I guess as a DJ, you can create the environment you want as opposed to in the corporate world, you bounce around looking for the environment you want. What was the turning point where you decided you were going to do your own thing, that you weren't going to wait until you were 40 to start that business?
Yeah, so it happened on accident. It was my junior year I was entering into. I was still fixated that I was going to be in marketing when I graduated undergrad. So I was like, you know what? Spring semester, I'm going to do an internship and I'm going to rock it. And so I got the internship, which was extremely difficult to get into. The end of the internship, I go in for my final review for my internship. And my supervisor's like, oh yeah, Pam, like, you know, thank you so much for everything throughout the semester.
you know, and I'm like, oh yeah, no, thank you guys. Learned so much. This is so cool. Like what a different experience for me. You know, what's my grade? And of course, I'm the kid that showed up every single day, was going above and beyond, was crushing it, participating in everything, like teacher's pet level type stuff. But I'm just built to do things at a very high level and to always be doing multiple things at once. Like I can't sit still, right? And so she's like, oh, Pam, it's a B minus. And I was like, can I just ask why? You know, in the interior of me was like filled with rage, right? Because I'm like, dude, I showed up. I did all the things. Why did I get a B minus here? Like, I get punished for doing the right thing. Like, I don't get it. And she literally said to me the words that changed my life. You're just too ambitious. And I remember hearing that and just like going ballistic in my mind. Like, you know, but still got to keep your cool in front of people, right? Like, you're like, you're just too ambitious. Like, I like lost my mind. I'm like, that's the one thing my parents always said to do was just to be ambitious and go out there and get it. And whatever it is that you want, you go get it. And that's what I did my whole life. Whatever I wanted, I got it, period, because I worked my tail off for it. Now, if it was meant for me or not, you know, dictates itself in the future. But, you know, I remember walking out of that room and, you know, I said, thank you so much. And, you know, I was walking out of the office threshold door and I remember, you know, just like, little tap on my shoulder that was like, hey, Pam, you're not meant to work for anybody when you graduate. You're meant to do your own thing. This is why this didn't work out. And I felt this immediate relief. And I was like, oh, I get it. And later that summer, you know, my dad had a vacancy coming up in his building next to his restaurant, which is where I had been like my whole life. You know, that's where I worked and helped my parents and all of that. And I had the opportunity to present a business plan to my dad. And so that's what I did. And got prepared for senior year.
Okay, so so you tried too hard and you crushed it too hard at your internship, and they're like, "Hey, we don't like overachievers over here. We only do the status quo," and so that sort of lit this fire in you to be like, "All right, I'm gonna be too ambitious, but for myself." I feel like I said that word myself, and then you called your parents and you're like, "Hey guys, I'm never gonna work for somebody," and somehow, miraculously, I mean, I imagine they understood the grit that you had, but they were on board. And is this sort of like, did real estate come right into the picture as soon as the vacancy opened at your dad's place? Or was it sometime after that?
It was sometime after that. So ironically, I had two restaurants by the time I was 21, because I was super young in college. So I graduated like a year early from everyone. So I opened my first restaurant, which was Rhea. And then I was offered a partnership opportunity on another restaurant in downtown Boston. So I had two restaurants that I was running.
Wow.
By like my senior year.
At 21?
Uh-huh. And wow. One of them, the one in downtown Boston, was like the biggest food operations in the entire country. So like if you know where the Hatch Shell is in Boston, where they do July 4th, like the pops and all that. So my partner, we ran that. So we ran every food vendor from like the Mass Ave, so from the Museum of Science to the Mass Ave Bridge, which is miles. So we controlled that. And then we had a brick and mortar location as well. So, and I had another restaurant on top of that. So this was me at 21, hustling around, like, I mean, working every single day because events, you know, is primarily weekends, right? And it's like 12 to 14 hour days. And I'm sitting here like, man, this is craziness. I'm like, I started two of my own businesses. I thought this was going to be the dream. And like, here I am, still hustling, still grinding, still working. Like, what is going on, right? I still wasn't fulfilled and it felt so messed up. This is another moment that I felt like down and out and failure on myself because I'm like, this is like people's dreams to open their own business. And here I am not fulfilled. I felt like an ungrateful, like little kid. I'm like, but I wasn't happy. And then, you know, these real estate developers started to come through our stores and my restaurants. I'm like, who are these dudes, man? They come in like whenever they want. They have the nicest cars, the nicest clothes. They're talking about their vacations and how they're going to leave on Thursday night to go to their, you know, vacation house. And I'm like, there is no way that they do anything legal. Like, these are drug dealers, 100,000%. These are drug dealers. Like, there's no legality in what they do. And then I started talking to them. I'm like, what do you guys actually do? You know, I started getting into it. And they were telling me about making your money work for you. And just like concepts that you've never heard before. And here I was, you know, I went through undergrad, a very expensive undergrad. Luckily, I had it, full scholarship there, but, you know, did all the things that society told me to, right? Like, you know, and even started my own businesses and just all these things. And yet I still wasn't exposed to these ideologies and these types of businesses where, you know, making everybody work for you, investing, like what is that? You know, as an immigrant, we knew that hustle determined your success levels. Like if you weren't working, then you weren't successful, period. And that's just the way it was. And so that's when I decided to go into real estate investing, because I was like, what is this game that they're talking about? Like, I don't get it. Like, this is pretty, pretty cool. It's like, let me look into this. And that's when I dove in. So again, a whole nother accident that kind of just happened on its own.
Wow. That's crazy. Well, you know, an accident, quote unquote, but I think really it's your ability to adapt, I'm sure, is sort of really what forms your entire career. It's really cool to hear this unfold. So let's get into your early deals. First, it sounds like you, from our previous talk, you had a mentor. So what made you choose to get a mentor diving right into real estate?
Well, I mean, so my game plan in getting into real estate and the reason why I got into it was not for me to get out of restaurants. My whole game plan was like, hey, I want to do a flip or two per year so that I can have some additional income, be, you know, aside from my restaurants. And it's something that I can do because I don't have to be on site every day and, you know, all these things. So is my uncle was a GC and all of that. And so I remember thinking about getting into it, and I literally went to every networking event that I possibly could, connected with everyone that I possibly could, and everything. And this was around the time that HGTV was really blown up, Flip or Flop, and all those shows were coming out and all of that. And I remember just thinking to myself, I'm like, Pam, you have so much to lose. Like, you need to hire a coach. Like, you know, and my mentors were telling me the same thing. They're like, Pam, you know, this is a brand new game for you. You've got a lot to lose. You have two restaurants. You've got employees and things. You can't just like try to figure it out. This is big money where you could lose thousands. Like, yes, it's high risk, high reward, but you also, it's high risk and you could lose your damn shirt. And so that was the best move I ever did, literally.
Yeah. Learn from someone else's experience, right? And so obviously it sounds like you were able to avoid a ton of mistakes, but you said that you wanted to do a couple of flips every single year to start making some extra income every single year. You landed on flips. How did you land on what to look for in a flip, really not knowing much about the real estate landscape?
So everything ran by my coach. Like, I was trained by him. Like every single move that I made was always like audited, I like to say. I'm like, okay, so show me the way. How do I get to these deals? How do I make this happen? Like, it was like a step by step. I got like the hand holding the whole time. So he told me, you know, Pam, number one thing is you fall in love with numbers and not the actual house. And you run numbers and analyze every single property. But he's like, but first you've got to figure out like, what are you going to buy? You know, what's your budget? What are you going to buy? And then from there, you can work numbers. But if you're kind of in the unknown, like, you're going to be all over the place, right? Which is what happens with most investors as they're starting. They want to do everything, everywhere. You know, so they live on the East Coast, but they want to do a deal on the West Coast because they think magically somehow it's going to happen, right? So, you know, you told me, get very focused on what it is that you want. Figure out your asset class, your budget, and then move from there. And I said, well, you know, I'd like to start with a single family. It seems manageable. I don't want to go into like a two or three unit property when it's my first like rehab. You know, I want to be as low risk as I possibly can. And single family was that. So that's what we were looking for. And we came across an awesome deal from a local wholesaler, actually, and picked that deal up. That was like the deal that made me go all in real estate, to be honest with you.
It sounds so obvious when you say it, because it's sort of like hiring a personal trainer at a gym. They just know how to guide you immediately. Hey, this is what you do. This is what you don't do. You do this and this and this. If you do all these things, you'll have results. And I kind of feel like sometimes coaches get way too much of a bad shake in this industry, but it sounds like it ended up working for you pretty fantastically. So I do want to hear about your first flip. Tell us the story. How did it all pan out?
Sure. Well, the first day that I pulled up to it, I couldn't find it. I drove by it like 17 times. And I was like, what is this thing? And I remember going in and it was like terrifying. Like, it had fallen apart. And the family, so the story was that the family had, so the kids were out of state, they're older, they moved out of state, and the parents had gone to a nursing home. And so the house had been sitting vacant for a while and serious disrepair, which was super sad because I could see so many different beautiful characteristics in the house, like cathedral ceilings and all this gorgeousness that it had and all the potential that it had. And I remember, you know, the sellers really, you know, the son was mainly handling it. And he said to me, he said something to me and he's like, Pam, you know, please just one thing, like, please restore this house the way we remember it as kids, you know, because that was like our home that we grew up in. And we really like, we just want to see it come back to life because it's so sad to see it in disrepair. So pick that thing up at like $150. It was an awesome deal. You know, I'm like, I wish we could do 150s here in around the Boston Mass market. And then it was a full gut rehab. You know, we added another bathroom and all the things. It ended up being a 3-bed, 2-bath. And absolutely came out absolutely gorgeous. And I'll never forget, I sent those photos to the family in the video walkthroughs when we were done. And they were absolutely mind blown. They're like, how did you do that? Like, it looks absolutely unreal. Like, Pam, thank you so much for restoring that, you know, and our family legacy can now continue, you know, that we're happy that it's at this stage now. And then I'll never forget, I'm sitting there at the open house and I'm like, I'm just soaking it all in. Like, I'm just like, I see the family that actually ended up buying the property and they're interacting with it. They're engaging with it. They're loving it. And like, you know, talking about all the details, like all the things and all like the heart and soul that I put into it, they're talking about it. And I'm like, wow, this is the coolest thing in the world. It was like a very surreal experience for me, kind of sitting back and being like, holy crap, like this is how you impact people, right? Like, you literally are creating the homes or the properties that people create memories in. Like, that's the craziest thing in the whole entire world. Like, the coolest thing and the greatest privilege.
So that was the affirmation. Like, this is where I'm supposed to be. I'm doing the right thing.
Oh my God, yeah.
Now, I'm curious because you grew up in the restaurant industry trying to figure out how do we use space? How do we create an environment that people want to make memories? They're kind of coming here. They're going to eat. You want them to feel welcome. You want them to be in an environment that they're comfortable. They're going to laugh, tell jokes. You sort of applied that same logic to housing. Do you think that was just happenstance, or do you think that some of your background in the entrepreneurial world made it so that designing homes clicked for you?
Totally. So it was something that I didn't even realize that I had. Like, I can literally walk into a space and see it all. You know, for me, it was like, nothing scares me, still doesn't. And people are amazed by that. Like, it'll be just like the crappiest, dingiest. And they're like, Pam, and I'm like, oh, if you take down this wall and this wall, keep this open concept and this is like, I can see the final product up here in ways that other people can't. Like, my visualization skills are on a whole nother level when it comes to that. And that's what happened with that property. And to add some figures and some backdrop on that one, I made $100K on that deal. I put in about, I think it was like 125, and then we had some holding costs and stuff and ultimately sold it for over 400. So on my first deal, you know, making pretty much 100K profit, you know, I'm thinking to myself as somebody who owns 2 restaurants, like, how many dinners or sandwiches do I have to sell to net 100K? It's a lot of, it was a lot of sandwiches, right? So it all started clicking for me. And, you know, designing out my restaurants, I didn't realize that I had that skill set in designing places and things and how that really applied to what was going to happen down the line in real estate, you know, through development and all of that. So it was all connected. I see it now, but at the time I was like always so super confused.
So Pam, you have now done over 100 deals, like we said when we started the podcast here. What are some lessons that you can share that you've learned along the way?
So the top three, I would say, is financial forecasting, operational efficiencies, and partnerships. So those three things have been the most critical that I've learned. And starting with financial forecasting, now I tend to be a very optimistic human being. And the thing is, I'm like, oh, I can get it done within 6 months. I can get it done, you know, with X amount budget. Found out a couple of times that that really wasn't the case, right? Like, I under budgeted where I was supposed to and realized that cash flow is really important, right? Cash is king to keep all the deals moving and flowing so you don't run into any issues. However, how did I mitigate that, right? And what was the lesson learned there? Number one is, make sure you're opting in for a contingency on every single one of your deals. Create a cushion for yourself in every deal that you do. I don't care if it's a flip. I don't care if it's a buy and hold. I don't care if it's anything like that. Make sure you're allocating 20 to 25%. Like, hey, if this goes south, I'm going to make sure that I have this in my budget to allocate for that. And guess what? If the project goes awesome and you're just as optimistic as you thought you were going to be, then amazing. You get to keep that money at the end of the day, but at least allocate that when you're analyzing the deal from day one. Tying into the financial forecasting model, another item that I would like to add in there is making sure that you have several different exit strategies when it comes to a property. We're in a market where things seem to be changing on a month by month basis. So if you're purchasing something as a flip, make sure that you are also running it as a long-term hold, just in case that property for some reason isn't selling or it's going to sell for less than what you thought it would, so that you're not losing money on the deal. So make sure that when you're running your numbers from day one, you're analyzing different ways that you can get out of that deal with your shirt on. So if it's going to be a flip or buy and hold, make sure you at least got two ways out. So operational efficiencies. What I found was whenever I would have a deal that was more than 30 minutes away from each other, I would have operational inefficiencies. Because for example, I'm in Boston and there's North Shore and South Shore. And typically there's no contractor who works on the North Shore that's going to go to South Shore. It's just, they don't cross certain highways. They work in their zone and that's it. And I found that I lost a lot of time that way, which means I lost a lot of money. So the key here is to make sure that you're centralizing operations. So if you've got one project going on and you're looking to scale some more, try to keep them within like 15, 20 minutes of each other. And keep the same contractors on the job. It's going to keep things moving much faster. So that is definitely lesson number two. So number three, partnerships and pretty much all the clan of people that you're going to have around you, surrounding you during these projects, which is a whole lot of people. Making sure that you vet them correctly, right? Make sure that your goals are aligned. And for example, like ask yourself question number one, would I have a drink with this person? Would I actually party with this person? The answer is no. Most likely you're not with the right, you're not with the right partner. You want to enjoy the company and build long-term relationships, right? You don't want to just, for example, start with one lender and then move on to the next and move on to the next. You want to stay solid with one partner, like one attorney, one lender, that kind of thing. So that way you're cranking out efficiently and building for the long-term together and have aligned goals. That's super important for long-term growth and scaling.
So what's a red flag that you look for in partnerships?
Some red flags to look out for when you are vetting your partners is like anybody who's really trying to like throw themselves at you, I find is like very uncomfortable and strange and never really works out well. Like if they're trying to throw themselves at you and get very salesy, and you can feel that right away, you're like, okay, this is probably not the partner. And then you're going to ask yourself that question, like, would I actually want to hang out with this person? Probably not, because they're like seem very, very clingy, right? Like all of these things are things to think about, you know, when you're vetting your partners, because you're going to be dealing with them nonstop. And typically they say that 10% of the people in the market do 90% of the deals. And that's the truth. Like the big dogs, the ones who are out there doing deals, are the ones who really don't say much, right? Like it's referral basis. They do things, you know, on their own and that kind of thing. That's who you want to be affiliated with for sure.
That's awesome.
We're always looking for ways to improve, searching for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for better is by matching with quality candidates. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Just go to Indeed.com/BiggerPockets right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Listeners, I'm telling you right now, it's not every day you find a game changer like Rent Ready. They're not stopping with just tenant screening. They've rolled out proof of income verification. Let Rent Ready handle the heavy lifting with automatic checks on financial stability and earnings. Plus, with Plaid certified reports, you'll have all the info you need right at your fingertips. Rent Ready is included in your pro membership at Bigger Pockets. And if you're not a pro, they're offering the 6-month plan for just $1. How great of a deal is that? That's 1/8 of a Chipotle. That's pretty good. Visit rentready.com. That's rentredi.com and use the code BP Investor. That's BP, like Bigger Pockets, Investor, to get 6 months of Rent Ready for $1. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes to help you see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like, so you can find a home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours even on the same day with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to help you get the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. Deciding how to invest your capital can be extremely challenging, especially when the market is constantly changing. That's why it's never been more important to partner with a company that has a great track record. The BAM Capital executive team has successfully navigated through the Great Recession, COVID-19, and the current interest rate environment while delivering maximized returns to their partners. BAM Capital is a trusted multifamily syndicator with over $1.3 billion in transactions, delivering a historical average of over 35% IRR with an average hold period of 3.5 years. And BAM Capital has consistently paid preferred return distributions for over 50 consecutive months, has not lost limited partners' capital, and has not called capital past the subscription amount. BAM Capital's disciplined investment strategy is targeting undermanaged institutional quality trophy assets throughout the U.S. heartland for accredited investors who are looking for generational wealth building or monthly income opportunities. Their offerings target cash flow stability, capital preservation, long-term appreciation, and accelerated tax benefits. Join BAM Capital's over 1,200 investors across 44 states and get started today at BAMCapital.com. Again, that's BAMCapital.com. Pam, what advice would you give to new investors?
What would I say to new real estate investors or those who are just simply interested in real estate in general? Well, first things first is you've got to ask yourself, do you want to be a passive or an active investor, right? That's the first place to start, because real estate is a very overwhelming type of industry. You can make money everywhere. The question is, how do you want to make it? And how does it suit your lifestyle and fit your needs? So are you going to go passive, which means you're investing in a fund and then you get your dividends in return and you're kind of hands off on the deal? Or is it that you want to be an active investor and like purchase properties and be hands on and kind of do the thing, right? Whether it's buy and hold or do fix or flip deals. So that's the question to start with, baseline, like, hey, passive or active? And then before you do absolutely anything else, that's step number one. Now, for step number two for advice for new investors is, how do you choose your market? Because this has been one that I've had to guide so many people on. And I'm like, listen, it doesn't have to be super complicated. Just start in your market. When I started, literally some of the best market that I knew was West Roxbury here based in Boston, Massachusetts, because that's where I delivered pizzas. And literally I was like, well, this is where I have the relationships the best. This is where I know every street. This is where I know all the things. So why would I not start here? You know, when I become super big, then I can go crazy and go everywhere else. So the third piece of advice for new real estate investors, anyone interested in getting into the real estate game, is surrounding yourself with like-minded people and creating partnerships off of that, right? Because in the beginning, like when I had absolutely no idea what I was doing in real estate, didn't know anything about it, I started going to networking events. Essentially, I wanted to surround myself with real estate developers because that's what I knew I wanted to do. I had decided that I wanted to be an active investor, that I wanted to flip a couple of houses a year. I knew I wanted to do it in my market, which was in Boston. So I looked for events in Boston that I could go out and meet like-minded people and people who were doing deals in that market. So that's super important. I mean, if you're connecting with people, like say you're on the East Coast and you're connecting with people on the West Coast, it'd be a little bit different because those are different markets, right? So surround yourself with like-minded people that are doing the things that you want to do in your market, most specifically, and if not, somewhere close by. And from there, you can start to meet your lenders, your attorneys, there's contractors, there's other real estate investors, and you start to get all of these tips. And sometimes in the very beginning, you may not be equipped to handle a deal completely by yourself. So maybe there's somebody that you can partner with at one of those events that you meet. I hear that all the time. So those are definitely the top three things I would suggest when getting started.
What are some of the skills that you gained working in your family's restaurants and then running yours that you feel translated into real estate? And what I'm hoping for here is people that are in a position right now, they work for a CPA, they're a paralegal, they're a nurse, they have something where they built skills, and we want them to understand how that could translate into real estate success and make the transition easier for them.
So first and foremost, I think that everyone who wants to start a business or get into real estate should have the prerequisite of working as a bartender and or waitress or waiter before they do that, because that is like the biggest pressure test of all time, right? So being in restaurants since I was 10 years old, I was taught to improvise. I was taught customer service skills, how to connect with people, like how to manage a million different things at once, operations things, like all these things that I didn't even know were like became second nature to me, you know? And so translating into real estate, you know, managing people, you know, motivating people, helping them when there was deals, you know, because in real estate we put out fires all the time. That translated over beautifully, all of it, because all the skills that I built in the restaurant world completely translated over. Even though it seems like completely different industries, it touched on the same things, right? You're problem solving at the end of the day. You're literally problem solving in relationships, which I love. And so for anyone who's out there that's looking to transition into real estate, I mean, I say this all the time to everyone that I know. I'm like, guys, real estate fits into your life differently, right? Whether you're a nurse, doctor, whatever. If you want completely passive income, invest in a fund and just close your eyes, and that's how you're going to get invested in real estate. If you want to be hands-on, then it's going to be a little bit more different than that. But just know that there's different ways for you to get involved in real estate, that there could be ways that doesn't work for most people, but it works for you, right? Like maybe you side hustle on the side and you want to be a real estate agent because you want to get closer to the deals. Maybe you partner with a local developer and invest in their deals. I mean, there's a million different ways you get involved with real estate. And just because like you're a nurse or a doctor, you're in a totally different industry, does not mean that it can stop you from investing in it. I mean, listen, your primary residence is real estate right there. So, you know, you choose how active, how passive, and how deep you want to go. Just don't be afraid of it. And if you are afraid of it, and if you are afraid of that risk, then just kind of back up and say, who can I align with that can make this a little bit easier, right? Like maybe it's a local developer, like I was mentioning, or something that you're taking the risk off yourself. Because there's people that I've heard that are like, oh, Pam, you know, to be successful in real estate, I've heard you've got to quit everything and put all this money in and do all this. I'm like, guys, no, that is like the biggest lie ever. Like just because one person did it one way doesn't mean it's going to translate the same for you, you know?
Question for you, because I worked in restaurants all the way through college. Do you still get those anxiety-fueled dreams where you're in the restaurant and you're trying to put the pizza in the box and you drop it on the floor, and then you try to open the next box and it won't open, and then you realize you left the pizza in the oven and it's burned and the phone's ringing it, and like everything is going wrong and you can't get your hands to work? Like, am I the only one that has those terrible nightmares, or have you had those too?
I have completely had those too, Dave. Honestly, I absolutely have. And it's so funny because I used to deliver pizzas as well. So like sometimes I would drive too fast and the cheese wasn't fully settled on that top layer. And if it had toppings, and I'll like open it and I'll be like, oh my God, the green peppers are everywhere. And like, you know, it's, you know, you're not alone. You're totally not alone on that one.
Rob, did you ever have anything like that? Similar nightmares to in your past jobs? Never. You didn't have a marketing dream where they're like, Rob, what is your great idea? And you're just like, oh my God, I don't have one. And everyone's staring at you disappointed.
Yeah, I guess my nightmare was that I would be so successful at my 9 to 5 that I'd keep getting promoted and then settle into the status quo of just like living day to day for, you know, the corporate machine that bogs us down and doesn't really ever let us spread our wing and fly away. And so, yeah, that was my nightmare for a long time. But thank goodness I'm a real estate investor now.
So your nightmare was that you were too good at what you did and you just got too comfortable.
That they would tell me I was too ambitious.
All right. Well, thank you for it. Those things are real, dude. When you work in the service industry, you are dealing with so much pressure and anxiety that's like building up and you just don't realize it. It all comes out in your dreams. And years later, I was doing that a long time ago, like 20 years later, I'm still having these nightmares. I'm glad it's just not me.
This inspires me to start a YouTube series with you because, you know, we always get the headlines. Like, I'm sure the headline for this podcast is like from $9 pizzas to nine-figure portfolio. But we never hear like it's always like from waiter to millionaire, but we never hear from millionaire to waiter. And so maybe you and I do a YouTube series where we go back to our grassroots and become a waiter again.
That could be fun.
And see if we still have the chops.
Yeah, see if we still have what it takes. Maybe like make an instructional video for other people. I could do that. Here's how you learn how to be a good waiter. I've often thought of that because like everybody wants to be the millionaire, but sometimes you got to be good at what you're doing to build the skills, like what Pamela was just saying. She got good at this, which translated to this, which translated to this, and ultimately led you, Pam, to where you are today versus trying to skip that whole process and not giving your best. And that's my philosophy is you have to pursue excellence with where you are. That will open up doors to get you somewhere new. So let's recap your current portfolio. 27 properties, the president of a real estate consulting and development company, a nine-figure net worth by the age of 30. What's next?
So it's interesting that, yes, that was a beautiful recap. It's been a hell of a journey, though. You know, going into flips, then I got into construction because I was boots on the ground the whole time, and then getting into brokerage because people are like, Pam, you're leaving money on the table by not getting involved in these deals. Everyone's asking you for advice. So that's kind of how the trifecta of all three came up. And that's how I really built this career, was through diversified revenue streams in real estate, not just development. And kind of when I got to my first net seven-figure year is when I had this little tap on the shoulder that's like, Pam, this is when I was 27. You're doing great things for yourself. What are you doing for the world? And I was like, well, damn. And then that's when I started kind of soul searching and, you know, dove into wanting to get into the coaching space because, again, realizing that real estate changed my life, right? And so that's kind of what has been happening alongside all of this, you know, the development, the construction, all of that stuff, the consulting and the coaching side of things is really helping people get to the next level. And then really thinking about intention has really been the next thing that I'm really like honed in on. And Rob, I'm so interested because I know you're in this space to hear what you say about this, but building with intention and kind of studying like, what does the world need now? Like anyone can build condos, anyone can build, you know, build new construction, anyone can flip, anyone can do all of that stuff, right? You just need to learn the skill set. But I really want to build with intention. And what is it that I want to build? I want to get into affordable housing. What I mean by that is things that can be reasonably built for a reasonable cost, which really doesn't exist in the construction industry right now. I've watched it for the last decade. I've been part of it. You know, one project can last you an entire year. Whereas if you get into creating a tiny home development or a shipping home container development, you are kind of accelerating the pedal much faster. You're not dealing with as much construction overhead. Most of all, you save time. And so that's kind of what I'm working on next is how do we develop these communities that people can actually afford, that can be done fairly quickly, and that we build with intention? How do we build these communities kind of across the country? So that's where my mind is next, to be honest with you. And, you know, I am expecting twin girls in August. So that's a big one in terms of family.
Yay, congrats.
Thank you. But in terms of real estate and business, it's the investment side, I really want to be building with intention. And then on the real estate front, I mean, I'm always helping people elevate through real estate, which is whether it's through coaching, consulting, you know, still building up my portfolio as well. But that's kind of where it's all at right now. I mean, it's such a legacy builder. Real estate is the freedom vehicle, period.
Well, let me ask you this, you know, as we wrap up here, why should you be looking for deals from your pizza guy?
Oh my gosh. Remember, real estate is a local business. When I first started in real estate, I'm not even joking, I printed out, like, I want to buy your house, put my cell phone number, and I was like, text me or call me. And I printed these out and put them on the pizza boxes at my family's restaurant because my family sold this restaurant about a year and a half ago. So they had it when I first started in investing, and I put it on every pizza box. And believe it or not, I'd have agents call me, homeowners call me. They're like, hey, Pam, like, we didn't know you were in real estate. Like, this is super cool. Like, like, I have an uncle who's looking to sell his two family or whatever. And I'm like, all my deals happened organically through my relationships, which was amazing. And that's how I got a steal of a deal at the biggest height of the market, which was insane. But yeah, the total valuable tool. Small businesses are so key for the locations that you want to get into. And the local pizza guy is the guy. He's going to get you the deals.
All right, Pamela, thank you so much for sharing your story. I think this is awesome. It's a wonderful, like, American success story. You started off with an entrepreneurial family. Your father starts a business, is not afraid to start in the trenches, delivering pizzas himself, bringing you in the car with him. You guys, he's bringing you to work and you're making these memories and bonding together as you're jamming out to the music of DJ Pammy B. You go from cassette tapes to CDs to MP3s. And eventually start your own business, realize you're too ambitious for the corporate world, follow in their footsteps, but amplify the success that your family had, making it even bigger, not afraid to do things differently, like putting your information on a pizza box and finding the right mentors. I love hearing this. I hope more people are inspired by this and copy it. Rob, what do you think?
I agree with that. I think we have a story of adaptability and how that turned, how that helped create a 9-figure portfolio.
So Pamela, for people that want to know more about this fascinating journey you've been on, where can they reach out and find out more about you?
Absolutely. So I'm on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, all over Pamela Bardhi, B-A-R-D-H-I. And it's also my website, www.pamelabardhi.com. To reach out and find me there, DM me. Like, I'm always floating around, just living life. So please reach out to me anytime, any way that I can help you. Like, I'm here, man. I just want to see people rock it and slay it. I mean, what real estate has done in my life, I mean, from delivering pizzas to a 9-figure real estate career, featured in Forbes and Time magazine by the time I was 27. Like, if that can happen for me, a kid that came to this country with absolutely nothing and was able to build that just through hustle, it can totally happen for you.
It all started with avoiding that Boston accent. I really think that the skills that you built resisting the urge led to the amazing success you have now. Rob, where can people find out more about you?
Oh, they can find out more about me on the Apple Podcast store, where you can leave us a 5-star review. And we appreciate it. I appreciate it so much that I'm not even going to plug my channels, because I would rather you just go there. Just give us a quick little, oh, hey, 5-star. Rob and Dave are so funny. We love these guys. We learned so much about real estate. That way we can get served up to new audiences and hopefully inspire more people to have amazing stories like Pam. David, what about you?
Well, I need the pity follow, because Rob has so many more followers on YouTube than me. So I will ask for a pity follow. I am not too proud to beg. Please go to youtube.com/DavidGreen24 and subscribe to my channel there, or check out DavidGreen24.com or DavidGreen24 all over social media. The most boring screen name in all of the real estate space, which forces me to make up for it with better content. Pam, thanks again so much. This was a blast. Thank you for sharing your story. We'll have to have you back on again. This is David Green for Pamela, the life of the party Barty, and Rob Salt Bay Abasolo signing out.
There's a reason small multifamily investing is so popular in the Bigger Pockets community. With just a 3.5% down payment, you can own up to 4 different units. Think about it. If you house hack and live in one of the units, you still have 3 different groups of tenants helping you pay down your mortgage every month. 4 kitchens and bathrooms you could renovate to increase your property value. 4 different Airbnbs, medium-term rentals, or other rental strategies that you can try in one property, all in just one transaction. Of course, the question is, where do you find a small multifamily property that you can actually afford? Which market and which deals are best for you? Once you close, how do you manage it, optimize it, keep scaling, and living your life without being tied down to 4 leaky toilets or 4 fussy tenants? All great questions, my friends. All to be answered in the upcoming Small Multifamily Bootcamp with Chris Lopez and Leka Devatha. So if you're serious about growing your portfolio with this highly efficient strategy, head to biggerpockets.com/4, F-O-U-R, today and join us in the Small Multifamily Bootcamp. See you there.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all host and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.